from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Nick Caserio joins us at the bottom of the hour, 713-572-4610. If you want to weigh in with a text, got any requests for questions or whatever, you can hit us on the text page. Astros yesterday, 5-3, they lose to the Reds. They're off today. They have two more against the Reds. It sounds like, fingers crossed, Kyle Tucker could be back for one or both of these games. We'll
That's
see.
He's running at 85% speed around the bases. I think a lot of people, my gut reaction without thinking about it at all is always with Kyle Tucker, or if it were Yordan or somebody. There's a part of me that just says, I don't care. I don't need him to steal second. I just want him to go out there and hit home runs.
Yeah.
And now, as Bagwell told us on the broadcast yesterday, home runs aren't what win baseball games. Bloop singles to right field are what win you baseball games. So, all right, great, fine. I'll give me a bloop single to right field out of Kyle Tucker, whatever it might be.
Yeah,
it's not like Kyle Tucker has been awesome defensively the last couple years either. So, just go ahead and just plop him out in right field. Give him instructions to only run 85%. Please, just get him at the plate.
That is interesting, though. Like Kyle Tucker, that's a big part of his bag of tricks is his ability to steal bases.
Yeah.
Is that something that you feel like, I'm not asking you, well, I guess I'm asking you, but like I'm more a rhetorical question for the Astros. Do you feel like that's a risk having him go hard into second base, you know, with the leg? I'm assuming that he's going to come back and they're not going to put him back out there unless he's 100%, like the bone is 100% healed, but still, you know?
Yeah, I feel like they've taken quite the precautions.
Very cautious, yes.
Including, yeah. I guess apparently taking their time and actually diagnosing the fracture.
Right.
So, for whatever reason or why they were so careful to not let anybody know that it was a fracture until Kyle Tucker said it himself, then I'm kind of cautiously optimistic that, yeah, once he's back, they've taken enough time, he's completely healed, and it's just business as usual.
Yeah.
And that maybe right now, with the 85%, they're telling him just be... It's that they're not limiting him to 85% speed because he's hurting or anything. They just want to be really careful and putting the cherry on top of the rehab.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder... He never... ever DH'd before. He's always in right field. I wonder if he's now I wonder if he's now part of this crew that's using the DH as sort of a parking spot.
He's got to prove to me that he's better than Yiner. That's all I know.
Yeah, or Caratini. Mm-hmm. When he DH'd that one time. Yeah,
man. Yeah, maybe get up there and switch hit a little bit, Kyle. Huh?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Be more like Victor. So we hope to get Tucker back here pretty soon. Verlander, I feel like I should be more concerned about Verlander. Am I putting too much stock in Yusei Kikuchi and Spencer Arrighetti by not being more concerned about Verlander? I'm like, oh, okay, well, they got five viable starters right now.
Well, you're thinking, oh, playoffs, you only need four starters,
correct,
right?
And
you're not too cavalier about Verlander looking the way he did yesterday.
Okay.
But... which, for those of you who don't know or whatever, he didn't look so hot. He really struggled his way through 100 pitches. But Look, this team was able to make a surge with a couple of offensive outbursts, but by and large, it's that their pitching has been dominant over the course of the last month or so. And I think when you get into the playoffs, it needs to be that much more dominant. If you're going to have minor leaguers up there playing in playoff games and World Series games offensively, you've got to have just lights out pitching. So yeah. I think that it should be a huge concern of yours that Verlander, A, doesn't look as good as he does, and that B, right now, if they had to start the playoffs today, I'd be upset if they started Verlander over four other guys.
Yeah.
Verlander's got to work his way back in, and maybe it's just a matter of getting his velocity back up. But, like, as it stands right now, you can't Jose Abreu this thing. It's not like Verlander is known as being lights out in the playoffs either.
No.
It's not nearly what it was early in his career where he just flat out wasn't that good in the playoffs. But I go with the hot hand. And also the guys that are younger and more durable at this point in their careers.
This is this will be a thing to watch over the month of September. It's almost like bracketology with the March Madness, where each week they put out a new bracket. This is what the bracket would look like today if the NCAA tournament started on Thursday. I think this is going to be something to watch, where Framber and Hunter Brown are locks to start the first two games if they were to play a playoff series this week. Like, if tomorrow the wild card round started, Framber's your one, Hunter's your two, and it's a best two out of three. I don't know who the three would be at this point. Like, I don't know, but I know it wouldn't be Verlander. It would either be Kikuchi or Spencer Arrighetti at this point, maybe depending on matchups, whoever matches up better with whoever it is they play. They're probably going to wind up playing, if they're the three seed, probably going to wind up playing Kansas City or Minnesota in the wild card round. But that'll be the thing to watch, like, each week. Like, okay, let's take a look now, and how do starters 3, 4, and 5 stack up right now?
Right, and in the wild card round, it's not like you can burn a start. Not that you can ever, but my God.
No, the start, the potential elimination game in a wild card game is the exact thing we're talking about here.
Right.
Because Framber and Hunter Brown are going to start the first two games of that series, unless something goes wildly wrong with either of them over the next month. I don't anticipate that happening.
No, and I don't know if there's anybody listening right now that would feel better about putting Verlander out versus Kikuchi. Arrighetti, there's a whole nother... I think Kikuchi, just by way of recent performance and the fact that he's got so much more experience, would be my go-to.
Over Arrighetti, you're saying?
Over Arrighetti, yeah. But there's, I don't think Verlander's even in the conversation. Unless, right now, if you string together a few starts where he looks like classic Verlander, that's a whole other story.
Yeah. The back of the baseball card scares me a little bit. I know it's the playoffs, it's not May, like it was with Abreu, but it scares me.
Kikuchi will get like 17 hours of sleep the night before a playoff game.
I love Kikuchi, yeah. No, I think he'll be fine, but I'm...
Kikuchi's sleep schedule fascinates me.
For those who don't know, he sleeps like
14 hours a night the night before a game.
Yeah,
it's not every night, but night before a game.
It's hard to do, man.
I feel like a lot of that's got to end up. I think he's in bed for 14 hours.
Okay,
I wonder if some of it is like he wakes up and meditates and then maybe goes back to sleep or something.
Going through Twitter.
I don't think he's on his phone. No. I think he's every positive stereotype of the Japanese athlete. I think it's
thinking of me.
He's like meditating or thinking about or praying or something. I don't know. I think it's a very monk-like existence for him for 14 hours a day. Or 14 hours in bed.
Yeah, a couple Verlander texts coming in. When are we going to talk about JV going to a closer role like Smoltz for the playoffs? Not this year. I'll tell you that. They gave Josh Hader $19 million. They're not going to make... And Josh Hader's been good. They're not making Verlander the closer this year for the playoffs.
Right. It's Smoltz. Plus, when I thought Smoltz came back from his UCL as a reliever.
He did. He was a reliever for like a full season. He was an all-star closer. He was like a 40-plus save guy during the regular season.
They didn't
season.
Add Hockett like all no. of a sudden in the playoffs,
no.
did they?
Okay. No. They didn't with Smoltz.
I mean, Verlander is a piggyback guy or what have you, or using him as your long relief. That's a whole nother story.
Yep. Man, I wonder how accepting Verlander would be of that role. Like, this is uncharted territory. You know what I mean? Like, this is a conversation that I'm guessing literally has never been had with Justin Verlander before. like taking on a role other than an ace level starter for the postseason.
And would he be open to it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, boy.
I mean, you saw what he was like yesterday, just getting asked to come out of a game.
You got to have, I know, you're right, when the selfless thing to do would be to come out of the game.
Correct.
You know, let's call it what it is. I mean, that's, that. I know he's got confidence in himself and everything else like that, but at that point, it's understandable or what have you, but it's selfish, right? Yeah. It's which I don't begrudge him for it. That's the natural, understandable human thing. But that's when you're at his age and you're having a performance like you are there, you got to take some checks to the ego.
Yeah, man, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Kikuchi and Arrigetti are empirically better pitchers than Verlander come playoff time.
Yeah.
And we get the, you know, JV has the experience in the postseason. JV has seen it before. JV this, JV that, explaining away maybe an undeserved start in the postseason. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
It's got just too many. It brings back too many bad memories from five months ago.
We got a whole month. It's not like the playoffs start next week. We got a whole month for this thing to work itself out, but we're three starts in, and he's not better than these other guys.
This is the kind of debate that can divide a city, Sean. The kind of thing where I would be miserable because I know that a lot of our listeners might be angry at me for whatever opinion I have. And you know me, I shy away from giving opinions or being unpopular.
Right.
So it'd be hard. It'd be really hard for me.
All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Nick Caserio joins us at the bottom of the hour. Up next, D'Amico Ryans had an interesting answer. A year under your belt. How have things been going with a year under your belt? And what's he been trying to get better at as a head coach? I like this answer. We'll get to that with D'Amico Ryans. Nick Caserio joins us live. Bottom of the hour. Stay there.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, we should make a programming note here. One, because it's relevant, and two, it's kind of funny. Throughout the season, Ross Tucker, our good friend, Odyssey NFL insider, is going to be joining us at 7 a.m. on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
Which is fun because that's the nice long segment that we have. So we, you know, if we need to run a little long with old Tuck, we can. We can do that, which we do.
He's very entertaining.
He is. He's really good. Now, today I think was supposed to be the first day we were going to have Ross on. It would not have worked out anyways at 7 a.m. because we've got Caserio at 7:30. And, you know, the clock gets a little moved around for Nick a little bit. That's the funny part is that if you listen to the show, if you're a regular listener, you know that multiple times Ross Tucker got bumped by Nick Caserio last season?
We would have, you know, he did a game in Hawaii this weekend, I think.
Yeah.
So it would have, it probably would have gone long, because when Ross is sleep deprived, he's at his looniest.
He's at his best.
And it's very entertaining. So he's probably, his sleep schedule is probably all screwed up right now.
Now, we will get a crack at Ross today, because we just texted with him. He's going to come on at 9 a.m. today.
As a one-off. Oh, so he'll be even loonier.
Yeah, so he normally will be on with us at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. So make a note of that. I know a lot of you enjoy Ross. But today, 9 a.m., because as has happened before, he's getting bumped for Nick Caserio, who, as Ross has said before, Nick Caserio is the one who conducted Ross Tucker's workout for the Patriots back in the day. They've got history with each other.
And they ended up signing him, right?
They did.
So Patriots did sign him. So maybe Nick liked what he saw, or maybe Nick was like the one guy that was like, all right, fine. If you guys like this all right,
we'll put him
on this Patriots team.
This, I guarantee you, Nick, I'm sure, remembers the workout, because Nick strikes me as somebody who remembers every workout.
Yeah.
You know, like he's got just this database up in his brain of that.
I liked the shots of Nick up at the Aggies game the other day. He was one of the five NFL GMs in attendance to watch Notre Dame versus Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And he was taking notes. He was, I don't know who he was watching, but he was taking notes.
A lot of NFL guys on that field, man, on Saturday. We'll find out. We'll talk to him in 11 minutes, and we'll ask him about his trip up to Aggieland. D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday. D'Amico, what's it like coaching a team that's no longer going to... You got a target on your back now, buddy. You're no longer the underdog.
Yeah, for me, I hear that about surprising people or sneak... Like, it's the NFL. That doesn't happen. Like, I don't care how you guys cook it up. Like, it's the NFL. Every team, every player is good enough to win games each and every week. So nobody's surprising anyone. Nobody's sneaking up on anyone. Anybody can get beat any single week in the league. So the whole narrative about sneaking up on us, sneaking up on people, or our expectations, outside expectations, for me, it's we're focused on our team and how can we go play really sound football. That's what matters to us. It doesn't matter about sneaking up on people. Our expectations, that doesn't change how we play the game of football. We're going to play the game the right way. We're going to play relentless. We're going to play with great energy, and we're going to go out and challenge any opponent we line up against for four quarters.
This is where I disagree with D'Amico and really a lot of players and coaches in that, yes, ideally that's how it should be. And it's not nearly what it is in college, where there are so many instances where the better team, I won't even say on paper, the better team, just, it's a bunch of college kids that are taking it for granted. They're going to roll over North Carolina Agricultural and Technical Institute or whatever. It's just different. And it is more professional week in, week out. But there is something to it. I think, but when coaches and players talk about it, they're trying to speak into existence that they're the team that never sleeps on another team, but it is a little bit of a factor.
Or the thing that D'Amico tries to speak into existence to me, and I 100% believe that D'Amico is wired this way.
Yeah.
I don't 100% believe that every player on the Texans is wired this way, because I watch them on social media.
Yeah.
That's the part that is, I suppose, a concern, right? That they're a better team now, and they're hearing all the... There are plenty of Texan players out there that hear the noise. It's impossible to in 2024.
It's the rat poison that Nick Saban talked about.
That's exactly what it is.
It's rat poison that they're feeding you. And so you spend a lot of energy guarding against complacency, guarding against arrogance, all those things.
Yeah.
And I think with D'Amico, you know how he's just so wired positively all the time that, you know, nope, this is the team we're going to be. We're going to compete every single week. But it is something that teams and coaches are aware of, that it's human nature, no matter who you are, that there's a Buster Douglas out there somewhere, you know, that you're going to get offended by somebody that's inferior just because things get a little too routine, or you get a little too comfortable.
Especially in the NFL, where it's so even, where the gap between the really bad teams and the really good teams is so much more narrow than in college, you know.
And I will say, though, I mean, week one, I don't think it's ever a factor, because just every team in the league is dialed in for week one.
Yes.
You're just ready to go.
Yep. Here's D'Amico Ryans on him heading into year two. What's been like having a year under your belt?
Going into my second year, is like I've been in the league for a long time now. So as a player, as a coach, so for me, I understand, you know, what the season entails, and, you know, you take it one day at a time. And that's how I approach the season. That's how I approach life. And that's enjoy the moment, enjoy each day that we have. And, you know, of course, there'll be ups and downs in life, but, man, you attack every day with the right attitude, everything will be just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, I think his message there is like, yeah, I know I've only been a head coach for 18 months or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I've seen it all. You know, like,
well, right, yeah, he's been in the NFL since 2006.
Yeah.
So it's not like all of a sudden being a second year as a head coach is he's going to wake up one day and feel like, "Oh, I've arrived. I've made it." I think it's just he would preach the same thing to anybody else in any job, that you just got to attack that day.
Yep.
That's where I like, including in his previous response to the previous question, he very much, that is his philosophy.
Of course.
I think the whole, yeah, compete every day. You know, you're not thinking about whether a team is good or bad, all that. I think he really tries to live by that credo. And a lot of the stuff about DeMeco being in the second year as a head coach, I think it's the same as it is with CJ Stroud or anything else. You can frame it in all kinds of different ways, but at the end of the day, so much of it's just about reps. No matter who you are, if you just keep working at something, you're going to be better the next year and the next day and all of that. There's setbacks and all that, but you just got to get reps. And every day is just a chance to get more reps.
Last one, what's he trying to get better at, DeMeco Ryans?
For me, it's just, I think as a head coach, what I've learned is just spending more time with my assistant coaches, right? Pouring into the assistant coaches more, spending more time of developing and helping the other coaches that I work with. I really appreciate all the work that these men do, all the sacrifices that they give up to be here and the time they put in to be with their families. So for me, it's just pouring into those guys more and being more of that developer. Talk about it with players on the field, but also with our coaches.
That's a Niner thing. That's a Kyle Shanahan thing, like the pouring into the assistants and developing your assistants to become better coaches and potentially head coaches. Feels like a hardcore Niners thing.
Well, it is. I think it's also a Patriots thing. Mm-hmm. I think that Belichick was always most impressive to me in how well he coached his assistant coaches to be really good at their jobs as assistant coaches. With the Niners, I think Kyle Shanahan takes more of an overall view of, yeah, he wants to help them develop as potential head coaches. That's part of the appeal of going to play to coach for the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan. But I think no matter who you are as a head coach, as somebody who's been a position coach and then a coordinator, it's like any managerial position. The further up you go, you realize, oh, okay, I got to take care of the power of delegating.
Yes.
And that my best, if you're a manager, you realize, okay, you can have the greatest effect on the organization by training six managers really well, as opposed to trying to individually train your 1,000 employees. Like, as a head coach, I think it's always that. It's realizing, okay, what's the most effective use of my time?
Yeah.
That's another thing. It takes reps. It takes realizing, all right, me individually coaching the linebackers is probably taken away from the sum total of everything. I gotta really look at the levels of the organization here.
We'll ask Nick Caserio about this, things he's seen with DeMeco Ryans, and we'll talk about week one coming up with the Colts and a whole bunch of things with the Texans executive vice president and GM Nick Caserio. That's next.
Are you ready?
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Man, that music has me so fired up right now. Most of the time it would be because, like, oh yeah, WrestleMania season is here. But now I know it's because week one is here. That's what the DX theme music means to us here on Payne and Pendergast and to our listeners. As we welcome in for his first appearance of the regular season on this radio program and YouTube stream and Twitch. You can find the show there as well. Nick Caserio, Texans Executive Vice President and GM, joining us. Nick, how we feeling?
Morning, fellas. Did they play that music out in Berlin over the weekend, Sean? Or did we? They probably didn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been able to watch it yet, Nick.
I haven't watched it, so I'll wait for your breakdown.
Okay.
What happened? What happened in Berlin?
There was a WWE pay-per-view in Berlin this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, the Bash in Berlin. Yeah.
Shocking. Seth wasn't all over that one, but.
You know how I feel about professional wrestling, Nick. I don't look down on it whatsoever. It's just not my thing. I'm just completely ignorant to it.
So Nick's going to get a WWE analysis and results, and my Notre Dame big board is what you're getting.
Perfect.
Hey, you were in College Station on Saturday. What'd you think? What'd you see up there?
Yeah, awesome atmosphere. It was great. I mean, it was packed, 105,000 people, whatever it was. I think it was the fourth largest crowd they've had at Kyle Field. So great atmosphere. Two good teams, two good programs. I mean, I think Coach Elko's got the A&M program moving in the right direction. Coach Freeman does a great job. I mean, you look at the coaches and how their teams play are the usual reflection of their head coach and their personality. I would say this, if I was forming a bloodline of coaches, I'd put D'Amico, Marcus Freeman, and probably Dan Campbell. That would be the bloodline there. So.
A little bloodline reference, too.
But yeah. No, it was great. It was it was great to get down there and just kind of start the fall process there. 90 minutes to get down there, see two good teams, just start some of the college scouting process. Our scouts have actually been out since probably beginning of August there, so some of that information is starting to come in. But it's great to be down there. Great atmosphere, great environment, two really good programs. College football can use more of that, two good programs like that playing each other on a weekly basis. So, we're going to see more of that here moving forward. I think Michigan, Texas this weekend. Yeah. So, there's a lot of good teams, a lot of good football out there. But it was great to get down there and, to see two good teams.
Well, it was interesting, Nick, too, as long as you're talking about Freeman. And we're going to get to the Texans, I promise, to the audience out there. But there's a Texans tie to this. Marcus Freeman talked in the post-game press conference about they bring in a lot of transfers now, way more than they used to at Notre Dame. They're in the portal like everybody else is. And it was really interesting to listen to him talk about what they look for in players, because it sounds like it's very similar to what you and D'Amico look for in players. How has that whole process at the collegiate level, the transfer portal, which is really like free agency on steroids, how has that affected the way you guys are able to evaluate that particular part of a player, just how much they love football and how much, kind of a team guy that they are?
No, it's interesting. I'd say the whole process has really been accelerated from a team building perspective. So you have the ability to kind of shape your team or form your team, say specifically in college football with the transfer portal. You can identify certain players that you feel are going to fit your program. So I'm sure Marcus, what they do is they prioritize, here are the things that are important, here are the things that we look for in players. It's funny you bring this up, actually. I was reading an article this morning, and they were talking about resource allocation, how much money each position is paid in college football. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean all programs are doing it the same way, but you have certain amount of dollars that are going to certain positions. It's not all the same. But regardless, and we've talked about this, I've been asked about this, do you look negatively upon a player when he chooses to leave a program for a different opportunity? And the answer is no, is because that individual has to do what they feel is in their best interest. No different than you have a free agent. Ultimately, they're going to look at a situation, figure out what makes the most sense, what program gives them the best opportunity, what team do they want to be a part of. And then from our perspective, and D'Amico and I have talked about this, the qualities and traits that that player possesses, I would say, outside of football, away from the field, not necessarily away from the field, but away from the physical attributes, are important. And I think what you're seeing is more and more teams are putting an emphasis on that, because the bottom line is, when a game is on the line, do you have people that are tough-minded, that are physically and mentally tough, that you can count on and depend on to do the right thing, understanding specifically in our league, the margins are so very small. So it's interesting. Every model is different. Every team approached a little bit differently, but you're starting to see some elements cross over from college to pro to college. I would say, as an example, the coach to quarterback communication element that's been introduced in college football, right? So now the quarterbacks are accustomed to having a voice in their ear. Now, I would say some coaches are probably a little bit more vociferous than others in terms of their volume, but at least the quarterback, the first time when they're on the practice field and they hear that information, it's an adjustment, as opposed to looking at the sidelines and looking at a bunch of cards of Triple H or somebody and to signify a play. So you're just seeing a little bit more, I would say, crossover and carryover in both ways, coaches, players, technology implementation of the overall game operation. So I think it's just important everybody to stay true to their process, how they evaluate players, prioritize the things that are important, stay disciplined enough and committed to those qualities, and then just try to get the right people in the building and ultimately give those players the resources they need to go out there and be successful on Sunday or Saturday or whenever they're playing.
Well, you know, I guess the other thing that's changed over the last few years in college football, and it's not necessarily based on any rule changes, but it's more and more common for marquee players, potential first round picks, to sit out a non-playoff bowl game. And you hear a lot of people say, okay, well, that's not a check against them. That's just the way it is right now. I think of two players on the Texans that have chosen to play in those games, pretty notably Will Anderson and Kamari Lassiter. Is this one of those things where, okay, it's not a check against the guy if he doesn't play in the bowl game, but it's kind of a check plus and a vote in a guy's favor when he does choose to play in that game?
Yeah, sure, Seth. It's always case by case relative to what a player does, but, and I'd say D'Amico has talked about this, you either want to compete or you don't want to compete, and it doesn't really matter what you're doing. You compete in a weight room. You compete in a practice field. You can compete in a meeting space. You compete on Saturday or Sunday when you're playing. And whatever the player do, part of our process, we just have to evaluate everything. So it doesn't necessarily disqualify a player, but what it might do is actually confirm what you already think of or have on that particular player. I would say in those two particular situations, I mean, they were spoken of in exemplary glowing terms at their respective schools. So I would say you're not really surprised that they chose to do that because they want to compete. They love football. They want to be out there with their teammates. It doesn't mean that players that choose not to don't feel the same way. It just means they made a different choice. So, which as an example, I would just say guys like Verse and Fisk, who we had the opportunity to practice against the Rams here last week or whenever it was. But those two players are as competitive and as tough as probably any two players that were in a draft last year. And you saw that on a practice field. But they chose not to play in their bowl game. And that was their choice. But it doesn't necessarily reflect negatively on them. Like, we still thought highly of Fisk. Like, Verse was a good player. He's going to be a non-factor for us because he went in, whatever, top 15, top 20. But his motor, his toughness, the way he plays, say the way he practiced against us last week, including Fisk, I mean, you saw the same things, and there's a lot of consistency in terms of the information that we had on those two players coming out. So the bottom line is, Seth, you just take the information, you make an assessment, and, you know, usually whatever the player chooses to do, that says a lot about who they are as an individual. It doesn't make them better or worse. It just might confirm maybe some of the things that you already thought or you have.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us on Payne and Pendergast here on Sports Radio 610. As long as Kamari Lassiter's name comes up here, Nick, Kamari, it feels like he's been at the forefront of that cornerback spot opposite Stingley from about the time he set foot on the property over there at NRG Stadium. What was it about Kamari to where he was able to kind of separate himself so early as a young player where you didn't see him in pads really until August?
Yeah, with any player, just looking for their mindset, their work, their consistency, and their process. And when we got started there in May or whenever we started working with the team, he started inside the formation there a little bit. You know, we were working Jeff and CJ on the perimeter, and we were going to move a lot of people around regardless, so Kamari was going to get some reps on the perimeter. So then we popped him outside, and then that kind of coincided with JP moving down to nickel as well. And as we worked through it, the more time that we spent on it, the more comfortable that we felt with, I would say, those two particular players in their particular spots. But say Kamari is a very mature, very competitive, very tough player. We've alluded to it, or you all have alluded to it on the show, the comments that Kirby made, going back to kind of Seth's question here a little bit about the bowl game and about his decision to play in the game. So say from the day he walked in the door, he's been the same player that we thought he was or had an we potentially thought he would be, but he's worked really hard. He just shows up. Another player, doesn't say a lot, just shows up, just does his job. He wants to compete. He's not afraid, understanding that there's going to be challenges that those players on the perimeter of a formation face, because at times there's not a lot of help out there. So you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. Your ability to bounce back from a bad play or negative play to put it behind you quickly, those are qualities that you're looking for in any player, specifically a corner. And I would say, you know, Dino and Corey have done a great job with the secondary group, Steven as well. I mean, we haven't talked about CB, but, you know, he's probably going to factor in here at some point. But, you know, we're excited about the opportunities that Kamari potentially has in front of him, and we think he can help our football team, which is why we drafted him when we did.
Nick, I think if there's one player on the Texans right now that I'm most concerned about, and I say that, I'm not saying that like with false nobility or anything. Like, I feel personally concerned about Dameon Pierce because there's so many things about him that I just absolutely love. But then he had, you know, a setback last year. And this year in the actual preseason games, we didn't see a whole lot out of him. And the biggest thing I worry about is that I saw him in practice, and I was impressed with him in practice. I thought he looked more decisive. I thought it looked like he had grasped the offense more. But the thing that Dameon did in 2022 that was so phenomenal was he broke tackles. Like, he broke a boatload of tackles. And we haven't seen him do that in a while now. How do you tell with a player like that that the practice is going to carry over? I know the blocking wasn't ideal on his 7 carries in the preseason, but just what was it maybe that you guys saw in practice that makes you still feel optimistic or however you do feel about Dameon Pierce?
Well, first off, let me ameliorate your fears. He's going to be okay, so you don't have anything to worry about. So I know you're personally concerned for him, Seth, but he's going to be okay. But no, DP's had a good attitude. He's worked really hard. I think, you know, the weight, I mean, honestly, he's been overblown. I mean, he's got good contact balance. He runs low to the ground. He can break tackles. In practice, we're not tackling. We're not bringing anybody to the ground. So you're just looking for just, do they execute the assignment? Do they have the right technique? So at some point, we're going to need everybody that's on this football team to make a contribution. So whether it's DP, whether it's Cam Akers, whether it's J.J. Taylor on the practice squad, whomever it might be. So DP's had a great attitude. He's had a great approach. He's in condition. He was out there every day. We've talked about this. I've talked about this. I mean, I'd say there's a lot of things that DP dealt with last year on a personal level that not too many people were aware of, and I think that's where you see the intersection of we kind of lose sight of sometimes that they're football players, but we're all people, and we care about them as much as men and people as we do what they do on a football field. So I would say overall, DP's in a good spot. I think he's going to help our football team this year. We'll take it one day at a time, and whenever the opportunities present themselves, you're looking for people to capitalize. And, you know, we're not going to jump to any conclusions. We're not going to make any decisions. We're ultimately going to do what we feel is best for the football team. So hopefully your fears can subside here, and, you know, you can get a good night's sleep now and not have to worry about that.
Okay. The weight being overblown, though, is it man, I don't know. I think back to some of the bigger, beefier dudes, and not that Dameon Pierce was like a Jerome Bettis type, but I feel for running backs, body weight matters. Has there been any discussion about any of that?
Yeah, I think he was, I don't know, 212, 215 when he got here, and he's probably a smidge below that now, so there hasn't
he's just,
been
so
this.
He's leaner, he but he's
gone,
not.
He hasn't yeah. gone from Jerome Bettis to, you know, looking like me at 100 and however many pounds. So
it's just so his sleeker physique is as much about body composition. It's not like he lost a bunch of weight or anything. He just kind of put on some muscle.
Yeah, you know this.
Some
sometimes
fat.
Just players end up redistributing weight. They actually, yeah. they may look bigger, but they might be a lower weight because, you know, their overall body composition. So I'm glad we're having a body composition talk early in the morning. Actually, I'm probably going to, you know, we're going to have a discussion about what I have for breakfast, so I'm sure that's going to be
yeah, but no, but I mean, you've seen this before. It's just, it's 5 pounds doesn't seem like a whole lot, but in football, especially at the more physical positions, sometimes that ballast makes a difference.
No, I would agree. That's a great word. No, that's a good point. Yeah, so, I mean,
it's not right. You see guys lose weight, and they're like, oh, I'm just as strong as I was before, but like, yeah, there's something about a little bit of lead in your pants that just, it actually it's extra oomph when you're trying to break a tackle.
Does Sean want to jump in on
no, this? No, I'm just saying, I just feel lucky not to be a huge fat person anymore. Like, I'm just sitting, back looking at, well, I had 9,000 steps yesterday, Nick. Take that.
I think you were funnier when you were fatter, okay? It's just like a lot of comedians. I think you're funnier. I think
funny.
Your ideal playing weight is heavier.
I think he's actually more funny now.
You do?
Based on what I've heard on the Smack-Off calls.
Thank you.
It's close.
I appreciate that. Well, I'm not going back.
That is true, Sean. Just I don't want to destroy your confidence.
Thank you.
I was lying about you being funny.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us on the program. All right, Nick. So the games with the Colts last year, we know Anthony Richardson in week two, before he got knocked out of that game, was having a big, big game. And then in week 18, Jonathan Taylor had a big, big game against you guys. How big a difference does Azeez Alshire make on that defense for you guys this year when defending guys like Anthony Richardson or Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah, we're going to need everybody on defense this week, especially I would say this is a really explosive offense when you add Anthony back in. You know, when you look at that game going back, I think it was 14-0 before anybody like woke up, from their nap. So, and then we were just, played behind the eight ball there a little bit. And then Gardner came in and, they were still able to put some points on the board. But, look, Anthony's a big, strong guy. He's athletic. He's hard to tackle. You have to be disciplined with the rush. And JT, like at any point, can go 80 or 90 yards, unfortunately, I've seen that a few times as well. So, it's a good football team offensively. They've talked a lot in the offseason about creating explosive plays, and they have players that can create explosive plays from JT to Anthony to, I would put AD Mitchell in that category as well. Pittman's been as steady and consistent a receiver as they've had. Pierce, sounds like he's had a pretty good preseason here. So they're explosive on offense, and I'd say they're explosive on defense as well. We'll get to that side of the ball here a little bit later. But so defensively, we're just going to have to be disciplined, and, it goes back to the same things, just doing the right thing, being fundamentally sound, having good communication. Don't try to do more than what the defense calls for. And tackling will be at a premium, so in the limiting the yards after contact, because you have players specifically in JT and Anthony that can get a lot of yards after contact that can break tackles. So it's a big challenge for, I'd say, our overall team this week, going on a road to play Indy against a good team who's improved in a hostile environment. So, we're going to need everybody that we take to the game on defense, and Azeez will certainly is a big part of that.
I'm glad you brought up tackling, because D'Amico mentioned that yesterday too. And that was the thing about Jalen Petrie that I probably got most excited about. I know, using him in the different roles, et cetera, is all really cool. But I thought you could tell from some of his plays in the preseason that he's made a concerted effort at getting better at tackling. He broke down. He had his arms out wide to wrap guys up. Was that a focal point for the entire defense this year?
Yeah, tackling is always kind of a tricky thing, because the way that you work on it in the off season is you just have to technique it, drill it, and it's really about positioning and playing with the right leverage. And like we talked about, we're not tackling anybody to the ground, but your entry angle, how you finish on the ball. D'Amico puts a point of emphasis on, we're thudding the ball, we're always making contact, we're finishing with a body on a body. In practice, and you hope to see a lot of those things carry over into real live game action, understanding that the opportunities are a little bit more limited. But overall, we've done a pretty good job tackling in the preseason, and we're going to be tested to see how good of a tackling team we really are in week one. But JP's worked really hard. He's had a great attitude. He's been very diligent. We've had a group of players that have been in the building since February. He was one of those players, so I would say he's one of our toughest, smartest, probably most versatile players, and he has the ability to help our team and help our defense, and hopefully we can put that on display here Sunday.
Nick Caserio joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Nick, we could tell when we got out to the OTAs and minicamp, you could see Kenyon Green and see just the difference physically and how he looked. And we finally got to see him get on the field in these preseason games. Give us your assessment. What are your thoughts on the preseason that Kenyon Green had?
Yeah, KG worked his ass off this offseason. So he was in the building from the start. He was able to train. When he had the surgery, the shoulder surgery, after the preseason injury last year, there was a period of rehab. And then once the rehab period was over, then essentially he was in the off-season program and he started training. We've talked about this. I've talked about this. And kind of going back to what we discussed here a little bit earlier relative to weight. Kenyon, that was an area that he needed to improve and kind of clean up. And to his credit, he absolutely did that. He worked really hard. He got himself in good condition. He took to the training. He had a good attitude. He had a good approach. and he was available. I mean, knock on wood, like he's essentially been out there for every snap. There's a couple bumps along the way, but certainly encouraged by the progress that he's made. I'd say certainly on Sunday it'll be a pretty big litmus test for our entire offensive line, you know, because you got to block Buck, we got to block Grover. Taven Bryan, I mean, they got a really good front. Honestly, it's probably like the strength, one of the strengths of their defense here is their front seven. So we're going to be tested here pretty early, and KG specifically, really our inside players. But credit to him for his mindset, for his overall attitude, and putting himself in a position where, you know, he has the opportunity to help our football team. Now it's going to come down to, can you do it consecutive weeks and be consistent with your performance, understanding there's going to be some good plays, there's going to be some bad plays, try to mitigate those bad plays, but it's credit to him, to his mindset, and to the work that the offensive line and the offensive staff have done, from Coach Strouser to Cole to Zach. I mean, those guys have done a great job, and, you know, Kenyon deserves a lot of credit for it, because in the end, players have to take ownership. So in the end, we can only do so much for you. At some point, like, you have to flip the switch, and you got to take ownership of your overall position, your overall development, your training, and, you know, to his credit, he's done that.
Nick, was there? I went back and I was watching some plays from 2022 the other day, just watching for something else. I wasn't watching Kenyon Green specifically, but I did a literal double take, because a few plays into this game, I looked at this offensive lineman. I was like, "Who the hell is that?" And it was Kenyon Green, and he looked. It was how Kenyon Green looked in 2022, which was a completely different physical specimen than what he looks like right now. Did you have a moment? Like, had you not seen Kenyon Green in a while? Like, when he came back from working out in Oregon, did you have a double take moment when you saw his new physique?
I don't know if I had a double take moment, but no. I mean,
you say, "Damn, girl."
I'll reserve that commentary for my wife, which I felt that way at the premiere the other night when I saw her. I was like, "Wow, it looks pretty good."
So good, we'll job, Nick.
Yeah, but no. I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, you know, you notice if a player has put in the work and if they've done things in the off season to kind of prepare and help themselves, and vice versa. You see it the other way as well. So, but again,
a
it's
guy
what
shows
you,
up looking like a dump. Yeah.
No, honestly, it happens, and ultimately, it's up to the player. We have more resources than you can shake a stick at here that are available for you. That from a nutrition, from a training, from a rehab, from a strength and conditioning, like we've allocated a lot of significant resources in those areas because we feel that that's going to help the players. So, do they take advantage of what's in front of them? And it works both ways. So we spend a lot of time. I mean, Ladd Harris spends a lot of time on nutrition. And we go through with each player. We customize. Okay, here are the things that you need to do. Here's the reason why. Okay, you need this before practice. After practice, it's important that you do this. So are you taking all the necessary steps along the way? Some players are good with that, and they're very consistent with the routine. Others need a little bit more work. But that's part of our job, is try to help them and nurture them along. So, it probably takes a lot for me to get excited about too much, especially, you know, when a player, like, you know, shows up and talk about his physique. Like, I'm probably not going to do that, but, you know, it's good when you see that the player is put into work and they put themselves in a position where they can have some success and hopefully help the team.
I like the humble brag. Nick's like, "Yeah, my wife was hot at the premiere last week, man. She looked good."
Yes, she was.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Hey, Nick Caserio joining us on Sports Radio 610. Nick, I know that you guys did all the vetting on Stephon Diggs before you traded for him. I'm sure you talked to plenty of people, and he's been amazing since he got here. I know what jumped out to me and a lot of people out of practice was just we heard about the leadership, but just how much he was coaching guys, talking to guys, both sides of the ball all the time. It felt like, did that even surprise you, the degree to which he was out there? As almost, it felt like another coach out on the field for these younger guys.
Well, I think one thing that you observe over the course of time, and when you're around good players and you're around good teams, there's a lot of discourse and dialogue with the other side of the ball, because ultimately we're competing against one another, but when we go out there on Sundays, we're one team. So what can we do to help each other? So if you're a receiver and you're running a route against a corner, whether it's Stang or Lassiter, and let's say the receiver has the advantage or he uses some technique to get open, or okay, then you go back and then they have some dialogue. "Hey, what are you thinking on that? Well, if your technique is here, if you're playing inside leverage, like, here's what I'm looking to do." So you want players to communicate amongst each other, and this goes back to, not to use D'Amico's quote or steal it, which I'm not stealing it, but it's just about what the program is about. iron sharpens iron. So you're making each other better. So you want your players to work with one another to make them better. So it's no different than CJ having a conversation with Aziz. So if we're playing, you know, some kind of zone coverage and, you know, CJ goes somewhere with the ball, maybe he wasn't anticipated where the defender was going to be. He might ask him, hey, what were you looking at on that player? What did you see? And vice versa. So specific to Steph, working with the other side of the ball and then working with the, you know, players at his particular position, Steph has a lot of experience. I'd say there's not too many things that Steph probably hasn't seen in 10 years or however many years he's been in the league. So if he can use that information and provide some insight to whether it's to Nico or whether it's to Tank, and I would say, like, this is the same thing with Robert Woods. Like, Robert Woods has seen a lot of really good football and been a part of a lot of really good offenses and has a lot of experience, has been a really productive player. So when you're in the league for that length of time, that period of time, obviously you have the physical capabilities, but there's a mental component as well, how you prepare, how you compete, how you think. So if you can use that information as a collective group to enhance the overall group, then we're certainly not going to discourage that type of behavior, and you want your players working with one another. So when we're on the practice field, we're competing with one another, but when we walk off the practice field, we're one football team, and then when we go out there on Sunday, we're just using the people that we have on the sidelines. So whatever we can do to help one another, that's part of our responsibility to each other.
Have you guys, to go back to Al Shire, you know, and how it's a different defense with him on the field, that he has experience versus Shane Steichen, played again, twice against him last year. Have you guys been able to, has Al Shire been able to share perhaps some of the lessons they learned to the first game last year, if I remember correctly, the Colts ran a lot. Zach Moss had over 100 yards rushing versus the Titans. And in the second game, they did a better job of it. And Steichen does such a good job of those RPOs that it feels like this is a challenge that linebackers are seeing in the NFL now that they didn't have to deal with 10 years ago, that the linebackers are putting a bind against offenses like this a lot.
Yeah, no question. I mean, Shane's a really good coach. He does a really good job, but the RPO component, it's really, you're talking about the linebacker and extend that out to the nickel or the safety, whoever kind of that seventh defender is. So there's a run-pass element, so you have to be disciplined with your eyes. You have to be disciplined with your keys. You have to make sure that you're in the right position, and you just have to trust your training and trust your technique and then trust a call, and it takes work. So it takes a lot of preparation, and you kind of have a background. If you have a background with a coach, it's relevant to a point, but then once you get into the game, then you're going to have a decent idea of the game. You know, we've talked about this, probably by the end of the first quarter, early second quarter, the game's going to kind of declare on both sides of the ball, including the kicking game as well. So certainly it can be challenging, but if you just are doing the right things and you're playing with the right technique and you're not trying to do too much and you trust your eyes, just trust what you see. And if you're an instinctive football player, hopefully you're going to put yourself in a position where you're going to be able to make the play, or you're not going to expose the defense or put the defense at risk.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.